It's a Thanksgiving program, and we're going to talk about traditions and recipes. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. StoryCorps is hosting its Great Thanksgiving Listen. It's where they gather stories of students speaking with an elder or a mentor.
The quality of their language was so rich, even though the actual subject matter was the most inane, insignificant stuff.
We're going to talk with the founder of StoryCorps about how they collect these stories, and we'll hear about some of the most fascinating holiday stories. Also, we'll be talking about our favorite Thanksgiving foods. We have a panel conversation led by Chef Norman Van Aken. And we want to hear from you about your favorite dish during the holidays. And some news. We'll hear from WLRN reporters who were at the Trump rally last night in Sunrise to give us an update. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. As we travel for Thanksgiving or prepare for Thanksgiving meals, we think about the people close to us this time of year. Sister Rebecca Katichis and Carolyn Schlamm spent at least a decade in Miami, but they grew up in the Bronx. Their Thanksgivings meant fitting insane numbers of relatives in their tiny apartment.
We lived in a very chaotic environment, and the apartment was seemed very small.
But one of the reasons it seemed so small was that there were always so many people in it. Oh, my God, Uncle Mac is here. Oh, my God, Uncle Saul. And so you had to go out and get a big wet kiss from Uncle Mac. And during dinner, everybody would be talking and talking at once and talking very fast.
The quality of their language was so rich, even though the actual subject matter was the most inane, insignificant stuff. I mean, Mommy used to go to the supermarket. She'd come back and she'd do 45 minutes on the bargains at Olinsky's.
The two recorded their story through the nonprofit organization StoryCorps in a recording booth here in Miami. Since 2003, the organization has recorded more than 500,000 conversations from around the globe, and they've been archived by the Library of Congress. They've also launched an initiative 5 years ago called the Great Thanksgiving Listen, asking young people to use the StoryCorps app to record conversations with their elders. Dave Isay is the founder of StoryCorps, and he joins us now from the NPR studios in New York. Dave, such a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, Louis. It's great to be on.
You know, you had this long career as a radio journalist before you started StoryCorps. My understanding is that you were inspired to launch this through a very surprising and deep conversation that you had with your father.
Well, that was one of the inspirations. The conversation I had with my dad actually was after I started StoryCorps.
Okay.
I did a StoryCorps interview with him, and he passed away at some point after that, very quickly. And you know, I think I as you said, StoryCorps, it's been around for 16 years. We've had a lot of participants, and I thought I couldn't believe in StoryCorps more deeply than I did. But that I was just talking with a friend here about our kids. I'm an old dad, and when my dad died, my kids were really young. And the night that he died, I listened to that StoryCorps interview that I had done with him that I hadn't really given much thought to. And that's when the rubber, you know, I didn't think I could believe in StoryCorps more than I did. But, you know, that's the moment when you're listening to this thing at 3 a.m. and you know this is how your kids are going to get to know this monumental figure in your life, that the rubber really hits the road.
Was that the first time you had listened to that interview with your father?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hadn't even thought about it. And then, you know, that night, it's like there's nothing else going on, and there's that interview in my computer. Boom.
I wanted to ask you about the experience of documenting the stories from the Stonewall riots and what it meant to see these men have their stories documented.
Sure. That's a very old foundational story. So before I started in radio documentaries many, many, many years ago, my dad was actually gay, and I was a kid and just started in radio. And the first documentary I ever did was more than 30 years ago. My dad had came out to me, and at some point when we were talking, he mentioned the Stonewall riots, which, of course, now it's the 50th anniversary. And I knew nothing about them. And as a radio person, the microphone gives you the license to go out and have conversations with people you might not otherwise get to meet. And I went out and I found everybody I could who had been at the original riots and interviewed them and put together that documentary, which was the first, I think, oral history or national program about Stonewall all those decades ago. And that was kind of the bond that brought me and my dad together again after kind of the shock of finding out that he had been in the closet all those years.
Being the 50th anniversary of the riots, you know, for you, and again, thinking back on your father, what does that do to you and for you?
The thinking about the anniversary? Well, yeah. You know, one of the things that what I StoryCorps obviously is, it was fun to hear that clip, which I hadn't heard in years and years from Miami. I think what it makes, what I was thinking about on the 50th anniversary of Stonewall was, and this is something that StoryCorps was engaged in as well, was just the stories of elders, people who had been alive before the Stonewall riot, what it was like to be gay in the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s. And we had an effort last year to try and it continues to this day, to try and capture the stories of people who were alive before Stonewall. Kind of, it's a little bit in the spirit of what Steven Spielberg did on Shoah, that we could, you know, capture these stories before they're lost to history.
The first StoryCorps listening booth was set up in Grand Central Station, right?
Yes, very close to where I'm sitting right now.
When you put that together, what was your expectation? What did you expect would happen?
Well, I had fears of what would happen. I thought that, you know, this was a, you know, this, it's a crazy idea. I mean, your listeners probably know what it's about, but we put this booth in Grand Central Terminal where you bring anyone who you want to honor by listening to their story. Sisters, like you just heard, you could bring your grandmother, a friend. Mostly it's intergenerational. And I had fears of, and it was kind of this experiment in human connection. You know, you open up this booth in Grand Central for free and tell people to come in and talk about the most intimate moments of their lives. So I had fears of, you know, Jerry Springer moments and people shooting each other and crazy stuff happening. And one of the many miracles of StoryCorps, as you said, 500,000 participants later, is that really nothing, and it almost, you know, stretches credit. It's hard to believe, but nothing has gone wrong in 500,000 interviews, which I think speaks to one of the core things that we've learned at StoryCorps, which is just about the basic, you know, the basic goodness of people.
Do you remember the very first one?
Well, I did the first interview.
You did the first one,
and this
okay.
is yeah. So this was the StoryCorps interview 001. Didn't happen in the booth. We here in New York, we set up a fake booth in Chinatown in a recording studio out of styrofoam baffles that were basically the same dimensions as the StoryCorps booth. And I interviewed the last person in my grandparents' generation, my Uncle Sandy, who was just a. My grandmother and her sisters were all nuts. He was married to my Aunt Bertie, who my Uncle Sandy was married to my Aunt Bertie, who insisted that she had invented fruit salad, and had filthy mouth, you know. And uncles, but they had all passed away. And my Uncle Sandy was just a regular guy, like you said, a farm boy, came in. And the question was, what happens when you put a regular person in the booth? And it was this. You know, it was this very emotional interview when he talked about my Aunt Bertie and their first date, which was right after World War II, and how he had told her to meet him on a stoop on 14th Street. Just a stoop. He didn't live there. And he saw her coming down the street, and she was dressed in purple from head to toe. And he thought, what's she going to see in me? And he panicked, and he ran, and he tried to open the door that was at the top step of the stoop, and it was locked. And he started crying, and he said, you know, I've often thought, what if that door had been opened? It would have wrecked my life, you know. And she walked up, and they got married, and they had this romance until she died. And he, of course, he was in his 90s then, and he's long since passed away. But that's the recording that we have of his life and story, and we continue.
Just listening to you say that, there's a lot of emotion there. And that, I know you've heard this so many times. I mean, listening to StoryCorps, a lot of people have probably told you, yeah, you know, I've had a lot of good cries, you know, hearing these stories, because people do open up and share some really intimate intimate details.
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons why that happens. One is that, you know, every interview goes to the Library of Congress. So and that's really part of the secret sauce of this thing, that people realize that they're speaking to their great great grandchildren. So there's an ability to really have, you know, an important conversation. And also just on the listening to the stories piece, you know, most of them aren't sad. You know, my great uncle's story about my Aunt Bertie, it's not sad. But when you hear these stories, people always talk about almost crashing their cars and that kind of stuff with the crying on the StoryCorps stories. And I think it's because we're surrounded by so much just nonsense and white noise, you know. And with StoryCorps, it's the opposite of reality TV. No one comes to get rich. No one comes to get famous. It's just this act of generosity and love. And it's so rare to hear that, you know, that it kind of, you know, it's almost like holy ground listening to people just being authentic to each other, especially in this day and time.
I'm talking with Dave Isay. He's the founder of the nonprofit organization StoryCorps. You can hear excerpts from StoryCorps on Friday each week during Morning Edition on NPR. StoryCorps is asking for folks to participate in the Great Thanksgiving Listen, an opportunity for young folks to capture stories, the stories with their elders or mentors, in a conversation. You know, going from those first booths in Grand Central Station, now, I mean, this organization has grown. You travel, you take that around all over. I mean, did you envision it getting to this, to become this?
Well, it was supposed to be a time-bound project. We were supposed to close after 10 years. And it was about, 9 months into StoryCorps that it started to kind of dawn on me the power of this thing. At the very beginning of StoryCorps, nobody actually came to the booths. Like, they were empty. We had, like, crazy people who got it, who would come. Like, we had one woman who came 200 and something times. She'd grab people off subways and bring them to the booth and interview them. But slowly, it started to catch on. And, you know, really, what there's two sides to StoryCorps: the experience, which is sitting with a loved one and interviewing them, which reminds people, you know, that they matter and won't be forgotten, and gives you an opportunity to leave this record into the future. And these stories we tell, which are like these kind of 3-minute poems. No story we put on the air is more valuable than any interview that's done. There are just some that have this, you know, thing about them that makes them appropriate to share with a larger audience. They're like poems that have a shelf life, hopefully forever, and talk about who we are as human beings. So it was not supposed to be this, but this is what it's become, and we're going to keep going. I mean, there's a lot of work to do. We're actually only domestic. It's only in the U.S., and the idea is that someday, you know, StoryCorps will be part of the fabric of life in this country, and we'll listen better to each other and recognize the poetry and grace and beauty in one another's stories, and just remember that all of our lives, you know, matter, and all of our stories matter equally and infinitely, and we'll act accordingly.
So you're traveling from city to city. You also have an app, and the app
is... and that's the Great Listen, yes.
Yeah, that's part of the Great Thanksgiving Listen. Tell us a little bit about how that works.
Sure. So a few years ago, we created an app that makes it possible for you to record StoryCorps interviews. You know, the StoryCorps interview that happened in Grand Central, or that happened in Miami when we recorded those interviews, and we've been back many times. You come to a booth and you're met by a facilitator who works with StoryCorps, and they call it bearing witness. They're with you during the interview, and they run the equipment, and they you know, help you through the interview and talk to you afterwards. And a few years ago, with the help of the TED Prize, which was $1 million to fulfill a dream for an organization, we created this app that makes it possible to record anytime, any place. It's kind of a digital facilitator, and with one tap, upload it to the Library of Congress. And we've created one of the app traditions is the Great Thanksgiving Listen, which started a few years ago and is growing fast. And basically, it's teachers assigning students over the Thanksgiving weekend to honor an elder with an interview. I know now it's too late for teacher schools out, but any families in Miami who want to do this, if you're a child or a grandchild, or if you have a kid and a grandparent, and you're together in Florida, you know, go download the app or go to thegreatlisten.org. Our app is, you know, in all the app stores, and it's just called StoryCorps, and it just walks you through it, and it's very simple, and it's something you won't regret. And it happened to me several times this week with people telling me, people who I'd been talking to about interviewing someone in their life, writing to me and saying, you know, that person passed away, and I didn't get to do it. So one of the ideas of the Great Listen is that people, you know, no regrets, that you have the chance to have this conversation, which is, you know, it really is kind of, in some ways, the best, one of the most powerful ways to sum up who a person is. And I think what StoryCorps does, because of the nature of the questions people like to ask, we're kind of collecting the wisdom of humanity. So, you know, it's an opportunity to tell someone how much they mean to you and help them, you know, talk to your great, 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 great grandchildren someday and tell them who they are and what they cared about and what they've learned.
Dave, do you feel a responsibility to preserve the history of generations as they age out? I mean, should we all have that responsibility?
Yeah, I don't feel any. I mean, I feel very lucky and blessed to be doing this work. You know, I think it's as much about I think that StoryCorps in some ways is kind of in everything we do, whether it's the stories that we put out or the interviews, you know, encouraging people to do interviews. It kind of shakes you on the shoulder and reminds you, you know, this is what's important. Like I said, there's all this kind of stuff going on around us, and we can kind of forget what's really important. So, I mean, this is every we did a book once on people who found their callings, you know, and you know, this is my calling, and there are a lot of people who work at StoryCorps, I think, who feel the same way, and we all feel a responsibility not only to record the stories, but to make sure that the ethos of StoryCorps is held to. And StoryCorps is really it's a nonprofit public service, and you know, we make sure that, you know, when people have a StoryCorps experience, it's as if possible, you know, an important and sometimes a sacred experience in their lives. And we're just here to serve people. It's, you know, it's in some ways kind of an outgrowth of the core values of public radio, which is where I got my start all those many, many years ago.
And I'm sure that all the people who have taken part have definitely enjoyed that experience. And I know for a lot of us as just listeners, we've definitely enjoyed listening to those stories. Dave Isay, again, founder of the nonprofit organization StoryCorps. Dave, such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Great to talk to you. Have a great holiday.
You too. And again, you can hear excerpts from StoryCorps on Friday each week during Morning Edition on NPR. StoryCorps, again, is asking for folks to participate in the Great Thanksgiving Listen, an opportunity for young people to capture the stories with their elders in a conversation. On Friday at 1 p.m. on WLRN, you can hear a one-hour special of stories collected during last year's Great Thanksgiving Listen. Well, still to come, we're going to get an update from last night's Trump rally in Sunrise. That's coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, last night, President Trump spoke for nearly an hour and a half at the BB&T Center in Sunrise, Florida. The speech was part of a homecoming rally. His family recently announced that they have moved their permanent residence from New York to Florida. The president addressed a wide variety of issues during the rally, including the economy, the impeachment hearings, and his relationship with Governor Ron DeSantis. WLRN reporters Danny Rivero and Katie Switalski were covering the event, and they join us now. Danny, Katie, great to have you.
Great to be here.
Also, a note to our listeners. Yesterday on the program, prior to President Trump's visit, we had the director for strategic communications for his reelection campaign, Mark Lauder. We heard from a number of you about concerns relating to the factual accuracy of some of his statements. We're going to address that at the end of this discussion. First, though, Katie, I want to start with you. The president called this a homecoming rally. Describe the scene as you saw it out there.
Well, the BB&T Center parking lot is really big, and so parts of it were sectioned off for music. Lots of people were dressed up, and sort of winding around the walk around the parking lot was a marketplace of sorts, and there were all different kinds of vendors selling hats, T-shirts, things that said slogans like adorable, deplorable, or Trump 2020, the sequel. So it was a lot of, almost a celebratory atmosphere, but a lot of red, a lot of people in Make America Great Again hats.
And there were protesters there as well.
Yeah, there was, on a separate section of the parking lot, they were kind of separated by a big median, but there were at least 100, I would say, Democratic protesters all in blue, and they actually inflated the kind of now really well-known baby Trump balloon. And they had lots of signs as well. There was lots of artwork, chanting, and really sort of their own counter rally.
Now, from what I read, the BB&T Center was filled to capacity. Danny, you spoke to one of the Trump supporters there from Coral Springs, resident Bob LaPointe. Let's take a listen to what Bob said.
I look at the economy before him and look at the economy now. Yeah, I think it's a lot better than it was before. And I think if any one of those morons get in, they want to tax the world and give everything away for free, you might as well just give up.
All right, I'm going to take it that he's talking about the Democrats. Danny, what is Bob's story?
Bob is doesn't live far from the BB&T Center. He told me he could have walked if he really wanted to. But he's someone that sees a big before and after from the Obama presidency and the Trump presidency, and he says he really likes what he's seeing now. And another thing he was looking at, he mentioned these morons, as he calls the Democrats. I mean, he is kind of case in point of someone that's looking at the Democratic field, and he feels that if someone in the Democratic Party wins, then the country as he knows it is going to be changed, and it's going to become more leftist, more socialist, and he is very much opposed to that. He's very happy with the president. That's something we heard over and over. People that were out there, they're very in support. You know, it might seem low-key in South Florida sometimes, but as he showed, you know, the BB&T Center was packed to capacity. There's a large base of Trump supporters.
And so, I mean, I take it that what we heard from Bob, that's pretty much the extent of the base of the Trump supporter.
Yes.
Katie, you spoke with a Miramar mother and an activist, Lori Woodward Garcia, and she spoke to you about her concerns and about actions taken by the president. Let's take a listen.
I think for me, the presidency's under attack. This is a president and a complicit GOP that really wants to be a dictator king. And so he's putting into place things that are very dangerous for democracy. So obviously I'm very concerned about immigration and healthcare and our environment, but I am most especially concerned about the presidency and our democracy.
All right, very different opinion. Katie, tell me a little bit about Lori Woodward Garcia.
So she's a big activist in immigration in Broward County. She's a Miramar mom, and she's an organizer for the grassroots group called Broward for Progress. And so she actually came to the protest dressed as the Statue of Liberty. And so it was really interesting to get to talk to her because she went up to D.C. to listen to some of the impeachment hearings and sort of made a trip out of it with her daughter. And she said it was a really powerful moment, and she really just wanted to be at the BB&T Center last night to keep that activism going. I think a lot of Democrats I spoke with really see this as a, you know, we have to show up. Because if we don't, then it just gets drowned out by the other noise. And I will say it's really interesting. I also got to talk with a lot of Trump supporters, and the attachment or the bond of celebration on the other side of this parking lot was really very emotional. I think I had several people come up to me and really just talk about how he made them feel, how Trump makes them feel as a president, and they feel. It's almost a matter of America, how respected the country is. And so I think a lot of people take that very seriously, just as seriously as they do issues like immigration or the economy.
Again, I'm talking with WLRN Broward reporter Katie Switalski and WLRN reporter Danny Rivero, both of them at the Trump rally at the BB&T Center in Sunrise last night. So the impeachment inquiry has taken center stage in this campaign right now anyway. Danny, what did you hear from Trump supporters about the impeachment hearings.
I'll say that people have been paying attention to it. I had several people tell me that they have been watching Fox News, watching other outlets, and kind of following along. The general line is that they don't buy it. They don't see what the big point is. A couple people told me, you know, I've been paying attention to it, but it's boring. You know, let's look at the big picture. Let's look at how good the economy is going. So I heard from many Trump supporters that were out there. They do not support it. They look at this as an attempt to what they feel undermine the votes that they put in 2016 and to, you know, potentially do damage to the president as we go into 2020.
And the president calls it a witch hunt. Katie, the Governor Ron DeSantis made an appearance on stage. What was he talking about? And tell us a little bit about that relationship between the president and the governor.
Absolutely. I do want to mention here, actually, Lewis, just looking through my notes, wanted to mention Lori Woodward Garcia was in D.C. for the DACA oral arguments, actually, not the impeachment hearings.
Okay.
So my apologies. But moving on to President Trump brought up Governor Ron DeSantis on stage, and they really do have a close relationship. They've had a close friendship since Governor Ron DeSantis was a member of Congress. And so one of the things I think they talked a lot about was, of course, Florida's corporate tax economy, and how friendly Florida is to businesses. And another interesting part was actually the president brought up that he'd been giving federal money to Florida for Red Tide. So there was a small environmental piece of this, but really a lot of it was, and there was an odd moment on stage between the two of them as friends. The president made some comments, I'm sure you've read about Governor Ron DeSantis' physique that was sort of interesting, but they seemed very buddy-buddy on stage.
And just to add to that, there was when Governor DeSantis was talking, he really talked up the fact that he has a good relationship with the president, and he said, you know, it's helping Floridians in very concrete ways. You know, Governor DeSantis earlier this year asked President Trump to allow drug companies to allow people to import drugs from Canada because
right.
they're much cheaper than a lot of the drugs here. You know, this was the federal government for a long time did not allow this kind of thing to happen. And then now the federal government under the Trump administration is moving forward to allow Florida to do things like this. And Governor DeSantis pointed at that last night and he said, this is what we have when we have when, you know, I'm governor and we're friends with the president. And this is the kind of thing we can get done. It has results for Floridians.
Did the governor or did the president say anything about the fact that they were in Broward County, considered probably the bluest, if not one of the bluest counties in Florida?
I would say it was a subtext of the entire event. Broward County is the most Democratic county in the state by some measures. And it's a big population, too. So some of the people that I was talking to on the outside, they said, you know, we get drowned out in the Democratic noise because we live in a Democratic stronghold. Well, there's, you know, a very considerable amount of Republicans here. So if you can motivate the Republicans that live here, then you can possibly, you know, turn out tens of thousands of extra Republican voters that might otherwise sit it out.
Again, the president won Florida by a little more than 100,000 votes. South Florida, Palm Beach County, Broward, Miami-Dade. Went to Hillary Clinton. Again, spoke with WLRN reporter Danny Rivero and WLRN Broward reporter Katie Switalski. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lewis.
Thanks, Lewis.
So yesterday we spoke with Mark Lauder. He is the Trump 2020 Campaign Director of Strategic Communications. And we asked him about the president's strategy for trying to win Florida next year. There were a couple of points that he made that needed fact-checking. Fact-checking is incredibly difficult to do in real time, and we attempted to address some of those today. First of all, he said that polls show people are souring on the Democrats and the idea of impeachment. Well, an NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll conducted during the hearings shows that actually, overall, 47% were more likely to support impeachment compared to 41% who do not. Second, Mr. Lauder stated that Trump believed the two largest polluters, in this case carbon polluters, in the world were China and India. But according to the Union for Concerned Scientists, China is the largest carbon polluter, followed by the U.S., then India. And third, Mr. Lauder claimed that when the president activates his social media base, he has more people following than people who watch the Super Bowl. Well, Trump has 67 million followers on Twitter. And Nielsen data shows 98 million people watched the Super Bowl last year. Now, it's unclear whether Mr. Lauder meant to include Facebook and Instagram, as Twitter is the president's primary form of communication on social media. Now, we do our best to hold individuals accountable when they are on the show and to fact check when possible. And we're going to continue to bring a diverse range of political viewpoints onto this program. We always appreciate your feedback. It helps us to make this program stronger. So thank you. Well, still to come, let's change things up. What's your favorite dish for Thanksgiving? Get hungry, because we're going to talk with a panel of foodies. That's coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, have you started preparing for Thanksgiving dinner? What are some of the traditions in your household? Whether you stick with the traditional turkey and sweet potatoes, or you like to mix in maybe some plantains, some black beans, or do you go vegan? We want to hear from you. What are your traditions? What are the recipes? What are the things you're going to be doing? Maybe you're going to go out to eat. Give us a call, 800-743-9576. Again, that's 800-743-9576. You can always email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Well, joining me now for this Thanksgiving food panel is Norman Van Aken. He has two locations at Time Out Market, and he hosts the program A Word on Food, which can be heard on WLRN Saturday mornings at 8:40. Norman, always great to have you.
Thank you, sir. Good to be back at WLRN.
And joining us as well is Gretchen Schmidt, editor of Edible South Florida. Gretchen, great to have you back.
Thanks.
And also joining us is Virginia Gill, editor of Time Out Miami. Virginia, great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. And again, the number 800-743-9576. Want to hear about your traditions. You know, the recipes that you're going to be making, or maybe you go out to eat. Maybe that's your thing. I want to get this question into all of you about Thanksgiving in South Florida. It's unique, obviously, because this is a immigrant community, got a lot of transplants here. You know, you get tourists who'll come in as well because you just had the Miami Book Fair, but you also got Art Basel coming. So maybe people come here for a longer period of time than just a couple of days. What's unique about Thanksgiving in South Florida compared to anywhere else you've been? Norman, let me start with you.
Well, all the time, it's the mix of cultures that makes South Florida so fascinating from every standpoint of food. I love to see what other people are doing from the different countries that comprise the immigrants of South Florida. But I have to say that of all the days of the year, I'm kind of a Midwesterner once again when it comes to making the menu, and it's kind of a traditional American, North American styled menu.
Virginia, what about you? What's a unique aspect of Thanksgiving in South Florida?
I think it's the tourist. It's winter here, or I'm sorry, fall. Excuse me, fall, but it's really when everybody comes to town, they want to enjoy the weather. You mentioned Art Basel. It's Thanksgiving being later this year. There's sort of a few days in between. I think people are taking advantage of Thanksgiving being later, coming earlier for Art Basel, setting up, going out to hotels and restaurants for their dinner.
All right. And Gretchen, what about you? And maybe you have a story of something that's really strange about South Florida, you know, Thanksgiving.
I don't know about strange, but I do know that the multicultural aspect of it is what really makes it special because, like Norman, I have Midwestern roots too. And I think even here, everybody enjoys turkey and stuffing, but that's where things start to look a lot different. You know, mac and cheese is it's not part of our family traditions, but it's, you know, we know Southern families look upon that as a necessity there. But we love to integrate a lot of local stuff, and that's different. So we will bring into tropical fruits into our meals, and, you know, our growing season is just kicking off now. So lots of things that might not be on your Midwestern menus.
I'm always happy when somebody brings in a bunch of stone crabs.
All right. Now, listen, Thanksgiving doesn't have to be just turkey and stuffing. I enjoy that too. Again, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Share with us your traditions, the things that you like to have on the table. Or again, if you're going out, you don't want to cook. You're going out. Tell us about where you like to go. Norman, how busy a holiday is this usually?
Busy in the restaurant wise?
Yeah.
It's a mix. I mean, because so many restaurants closed, that the other ones that remain open are certainly getting all kinds of reservations that they wouldn't on a Thursday in November otherwise.
Virginia, to what extent, I mean, are restaurants taking advantage of the holiday?
I think a lot more are staying open. They're offering brunches, which is not new this year, but I'm seeing more of that. Buffets are really popular. I think restaurants are opening, they're incorporating Thanksgiving ingredients, so to speak, into their menu. So you might see a turkey Benedict on a brunch menu where you might not have seen that previously. We're also seeing, as you mentioned, stone crabs. There's a lot of seafood. We're in the throes of stone crab season, and so it's not weird to see that.
I didn't know this. I've been living here for 5 years, but I didn't know this. You were telling my producer that tonight, Wednesday night, is a huge night in Miami for nightlife.
It is,
and people like to go out and have fun and party. But I was thinking, wait a second, you're going to stay out till 2, 3 in the morning, and then you got to get up in the morning and start preparing a meal?
I mean, typically the people who are staying out till 3, 4 in the morning are not cooking the next day. It's their parents or grandparents doing the cooking, or they're going out for dinner. If you're going to be hungover, Thanksgiving's probably the best day for that. You get to get up early, watch some football, watch the Thanksgiving Day parade if winter doesn't ruin it this year.
Bloody Mary in hand.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I think it started in college, so everybody would come home, be with their family, see their high school friends, and kind of take, that's how their night went.
You know what, Gretchen, the other thing too, talking about restaurants and how they, you know, what they're doing for this time of year. What do you see with restaurants and how they're utilizing local food and produce? What's growing right now?
Well, our season is really starting to kick off. It's been good. I was at the Arsh Center Farmers Market Monday night, which was like the last local market, you know, before the holidays. They had some fun stuff. They had ripe black sapote, that's chocolate pudding fruit, and that was an interesting thing that would be a great thing to bring to a tropical Thanksgiving family menu. But they had a lot of greens, a lot of kale, a lot of vegetable stuff starting to go on there. And that's another thing that's sort of unique about Thanksgiving this year. And Norman, I think maybe you've seen this. Like, there's a lot more vegan vegetable forward dishes that are part of the meal. No longer are the hardcore vegans expected to make do with a beautiful salad or, you know, some roasted veggies. Now it's part of our menu. You know, we're going to do a beautiful portobello Wellington that's going to be 100% vegan. And I'm thinking the hardcore carnivores are going to be real happy with that too, among other dishes. Do you see that as well?
Absolutely. I think that Thanksgiving, more than any other holiday in America, at least, has more side dishes going on with it, and those can easily be made into vegan dishes. So I think it's a beautiful time. Maybe not so good 4th of July for the vegans, but Thanksgiving can be great.
4th of July, not good for vegans.
Ribs, babe. All the time, ribs.
I also think going vegan is really good for desserts. I have a friend whose mom is lactose intolerant, so she's making a vegan cheesecake. Just an answer.
Mm-hmm. See, I love doing these segments just because now I'm getting hungry. But you know what? Let me go around the table. Gretchen, for you, because you said you have those Midwest roots. For you, what is going to be on the table? Are you going out?
Oh, gosh, no. No. All right. No, this really is the one holiday, I think, that really respects tradition in our family, but for a lot of people. And whatever that tradition is, it's whatever you grew up with. So we will always have turkey. We will always have stuffing. We will always have our root vegetable recipe, which is turnips and carrots and Brussels sprouts and all these things with butter and horseradish and fresh dill. If I didn't serve that, like, my family would never come back. we don't actually do sweet potatoes because nobody really likes them, but we will do them later on for another meal but not sweet with marshmallows. That's just not part of our thing. It's with cilantro and garlic, and it's a much more Hispanic thing because, of course, that's part of our family too.
I got to have the sweet potatoes, not with the marshmallows, but just the sweet potatoes. Norman, what about you? Are you working?
No, okay. No. Over the years, Lewis, we've always been closed for Thanksgiving. You know, we wanted our staff to be able to stay home with family. So traditionally, we're always home. So that means food at home. And because I'm usually like beat up by that day, Janet has been the person, my wife Janet, has been the person who has been the central figure in what the menu is. And so for me, she tried to switch something up on me yesterday and get another vegetable for Thanksgiving. I said, no way. We're having your green beans with almonds and shallots like we always, always do. So her stuffing, her gravy, her mashed potatoes, her green beans, and I'll, of course, be dealing with the bird.
You know what? The next time I do this, I want to be in the kitchen with you while you're making it because it's just making me hungry.
You're welcome to come.
Virginia, what about you?
So I'm celebrating with my family. We typically do yuca, black beans, but we also do turkey and mashed potatoes to appease the Thanksgiving holiday. Although this year I'm cooking for the first time, so I love green bean casserole. That's my favorite. But I love the stuff from the can, which I know is not very popular.
Oh, you're going to get a lecture now.
Yeah.
No, I think it's so fun.
Like the canned beans and the Campbell's soup. I'm going to make it from scratch this year.
Again, we're having a fun conversation talking about Thanksgiving meal, Thanksgiving traditions. What is unique about Thanksgiving here in South Florida? We'd love to hear from you. Maybe you're just enjoying the talk, but give us a call. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts. Again, that's 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-9576. Love to hear from folks, especially from different parts of Latin America and the Caribbean. What are some of the other dishes that you might be bringing to the table for the holidays? And again, if you're going out, you can always tell us, where you'd like to go. Again, 800-743-9576. What is your fondest memory for Thanksgiving, Gretchen?
Wow, that's a good question. It sounds corny, but I guess it's thinking back on all those times when people who aren't with us anymore, you have an opportunity to really think about family members who are long gone. My grandmother would always do two Thanksgivings. She would cook the night before until we all discovered that was just too much, Grandma. Let's invite you over here after decades of doing this, But it's really looking back and having a chance to think about your family, warts and all, and those conversations.
Virginia, you said you're going to be preparing the meal. The other thing, too, is Thanksgiving could also be interesting because you get lots of family in one place, and well, that could be very interesting, right?
Yeah, but that's why you're there to eat, and I think you can kind of deflect a little bit, talk about the dishes in front of you. I was never a fan of going around the table to say what I was thankful for. I was like the first one to dig in, but I think it's fun. You drink a little bit if you didn't go out too hard the night before, and it's just nice to spend time with everybody.
You know what, Norman, there was an interesting pitch that we got this year. It was, believe it or not, it was from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission, and they were explaining to people how to cook wild turkeys. What's the deal with preparing wild birds?
Pulling the buckshot out of them.
Oh, okay. I knew I was going to get something like that from you. I just knew it. Is it common?
Not so much anymore. No, what's certainly a big deal now are the heritage varieties of birds, and people are much more interested in seeing that their birds are humanely raised and things like that. So I'm glad to see that shift for sure.
Do people still fry their turkeys? Yeah. I know that was popular.
I think frying turkey in South Florida is probably one of the bigger states for it because it's warm outside,
True.
I mean, of course, hardcore are going to fry the turkey, no matter if it's freezing or not.
And also be very careful when you're doing that, because we, always see the issue with trying to do that and people not knowing what they're doing. Again, the number 800-743-9576. Let me go to the phones. I've got Charo in Miami Beach. Charo, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yes.
Thank you for letting me talk about Dominican Thanksgiving.
Tell me about your Thanksgiving. What's on the table?
Well, we do the turkey like most people do, but we don't stuff it. But the really, really main dish that we have for both, Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's is pastel de hoja, which is like a tamale, but it's something that Dominicans and Puerto Ricans do. And it is made with plantain and green bananas and yuca and a pumpkin and yame, which, all those like Latin root vegetables, but mostly the main ingredient is the plantain. And then you stuff it with some people with pork or like picadillo of ground beef with raisins and olive oil and olives and things like that. So it's then you wrap it in a plantain
right.
and boil it.
Wow.
Boil it or steam it?
Sorry?
Do you steam it or boil it?
No, you boil it. You boil it usually for about, because most people would freeze it first and, you know, and then take them out and boil them for about 40 minutes in water with salt. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's very typical of both Puerto Ricans. I think it's more Puerto Rican than Dominicans, but Dominicans also do it. And then we have pastelitos, which are the pastry with some people fry it, some people bake it with stuff, ground beef and sort of, you know, picadillo.
Yeah.
And then the what they call Russian potato salad, you know, that's also, and the rice with guandule.
All right.
And coconut.
All of it. Yes. That's all I'm going to say is yes. That all sounds fantastic. Chato, thank you so much. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Appreciate it.
You too. Bye.
Before I go back to the phones, just real quickly, we talked about vegan and vegetarian options as well. But Gretchen, let me start with you because you were mentioning that. I mean, that's becoming more popular nowadays, right? And going for those, having more of those
Absolutely.
Options.
Yeah. Right now, plant-based and, you know, vegetable-forward cuisine is the single biggest thing that we've done, and we'll be 10 years old come winter. We've been increasing steadily that coverage, recipes and everything, because it just, you know, there are many people now who, even if they're not 100% vegan, are just putting a lot more plant-based foods in their diet.
You know what? Let's take this call. Orlando in Miami, talking about vegan Cuban. Orlando, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes. Tell me about your Thanksgiving. What's on the table?
Well, I'm Cuban, like you mentioned, and I have a bunch of family in terms of mainly my aunt, and we go to her house, and my cousins, and they are not really vegan. And so I've been vegan about 2 years, struggling vegan, because, you know, every so often you slip. But and I usually don't take anything. I don't cook anything, and this year that's not going to happen. I'm going to take a vegan turkey from Trader Joe's. I'm going to take a vegan casserole and also a vegan mac and cheese. I hope that they don't, like, notice right away that I'm bringing it, I'm eating it, so it's probably vegan. And I'm hoping they don't even notice a difference until I let them know. I am trying to bring more people, actually, to eat more plant-based food, so any chance I could get. And this year, it's a big one.
Well, Orlando, I'm going to wish you the best of luck on that, but I still hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
All right. I hope, by the way, his family wasn't listening while he said that. Now they know they're going to expect that.
Spoiled his plan.
I will say this. I will admit that, you know, I mean, I'm not vegan, but I'm willing to try anything. There are times when I'll have something vegan. I'm like, yeah, I like this. And other times I don't. But, you know, wanted to get this in before we finish up is obviously some people are going to be cooking and preparing. Others want to go out. And I wanted to get from each of you maybe an option. Like, what's out there? Some really good places to go. Some are a little bit pricey, but because it's the holiday. But Virginia, I mean, what are some of the places people are looking at?
I mean, there's so many. Ariette and Coconut Grove is a great option. They have a buffet and they have delicious food, you know, year round. So I would highly recommend that. I know Lightkeepers at the Ritz-Carlton in Key Biscayne has a massive brunch. It's pricey, but again, if you're going to spend the day with your family, go for that.
Norman, also you got to make reservations this time of year. You really have to, right?
Absolutely. I mean, don't show up on Thanksgiving without reservations. It's going to be a heartbreaker. And you don't want to be in the bar with your family for 3 hours waiting.
Gretchen, what about you? What's a favorite place if you're not cooking?
Find a friend. Find a Friendsgiving. Find a Thanksgiving. I
strongly
believe. Yeah, this is. But you don't come empty-handed. If you know, this is your chance to bake. Bring something. It'll be welcome. But this is a time to be around friends and family and new friends.
Just don't crash Norman's place, because I would. You know what? One of these days, I just might do that though. And real quickly, Norman, for you, can you wait for turkey? Can you air fry a turkey?
I do not know that. I don't know the answer. I've never worked with an air fryer, so.
Okay. All right. No. Listen, got it in my ears. This is a question. I didn't even think about that myself. All right. What a great conversation. Thank you so much for the calls today. Hope you have a wonderful vacation. Again, we heard from Chef Norman Van Aken. He, again, is on the air, A Word on Food, on WLRN on Saturdays, so check it out. Also, Virginia Gill, editor for Time Out Miami, excuse me, and Gretchen Schmidt, editor of Edible South Florida. Thank you so much, everybody. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Everybody have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Absolutely. That's our program for this Wednesday, November 27th. Now, coming up next week on the program, it's Art Basel Week, a conversation with New York Times reporter Brett Sokol about all the happenings in Miami, plus a conversation with developer Jorge Perez, who's opening a new art space in Alapata, and he'll explain how the arts can transform neighborhoods and his renewed interest in affordable housing. Plus, the new film Waves focuses on a middle-class family living in Broward County. It features Sterling K. Brown from the hit show Us. The story focuses on a father struggling with his adolescent children. And we spoke with the director, Trey Edward Schultz, about filmmaking here in South Florida. All great conversations coming up next week. I want you to have a wonderful and safe Thanksgiving. Have a great weekend. We're going to be back on Monday. Remember, always find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Eat lots. And by the way, on Black Friday, please remember we are all human. Let's be nice to each other. Just saying. Have a wonderful one. We'll talk again soon.